Hey, it's Morgan Absher.
And I'm Kaylin Moore.
And we're the hosts of the Crime House original podcast, Clues.
Every Wednesday, we sneak past the crime scene tape and open a new case file for some of the most gripping true crime cases.
Follow and listen to Clues, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Primetime with Isaac and Sook.
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
Isaac Rop.
You've been busted. You lost your qualifications as section leader three times.
Jason Sukanik.
You're lucky to be here. Your family name ain't the best in the Navy. I'd like to bust your butt, but I can't. I got another problem here.
Primetime with Isaac and Sook. This sounds very serious. They are not.
I gotta give you your dream shot. I'm gonna send you up against the best. You two characters are going to...
Primetime on the Fan Sports Network, 105.1 and 1080.
You guys are number one.
The Fan.
All right, nice to have you along. It is Thursday. Sook's feeling good today.
We're in the danger zone right now, baby.
When you rip that shirt off like the Hulkster we are.
Yeah, brother.
Although
yeah, we're high tea today.
My tea has gone back down, I'm not going to lie. Turns out that t-shirt rip is only good
listen.
3 to 4 minutes of high tea, and then I'm back to being a soy boy.
You're like Scotty Scheffler.
Yeah.
What is even the point?
Yeah, what is even the point? You know, it's like...
Of being all high tea.
I was all jacked up for a moment, and now my tea's back to like, you know.
Well, we are your sports bros. I'm Isaac. Big Sook's right over there.
Thinking about having maybe a Caesar salad or something. I don't know.
And it is good for... I had a salmon salad today.
Yeah. I was just... Is that wrong that I thought of like the least tea food you could eat? It was like a...
Is salmon salad worse than Caesar?
I think a salmon Caesar salad is probably...
It wasn't a Caesar.
Oh, just a...
It was a salmon salad.
I'm not going to lie. Like, if you... Outside of like some sort of vegan thing, I think that that's about as low tea a meal as you can have. What did you have for eat? I had a very sensible, I had a glass of white wine, and then I had a salmon salad.
It was what if I had a rosé with it?
It was delightful.
Well, it was delightful.
I'm sure it was.
Screw you and your food shaming.
It's very low tea.
Hey, it's a big day for you though, because you not only shot a 43 this morning, mm-hmm. nine holes, but you ripped a shirt off your body.
So a lot's happening.
I mean, big day for you.
Then why aren't I feeling better?
Jason Sukanik. Well, because it's not all about tea, bro. Yeah. I know men think it is, but it's not.
I need to find something else besides high tea.
All right, well, we've got Hulkster. We'll get your tea back up with some Hulkster audio.
Brother, I was watching a Hulk Hogan like montage during the break, and I'm not going to lie.
It's awesome.
You get that. Yeah, I am a real man.
It's an anthem. It's amazing.
The slow build. And
it really is.
It gets you. It gets you going.
So didn't that I Am a Real American song, wasn't that written for him?
That I don't know. I think it was Rick Derringer, but I don't know if it was written for him
because
or not.
Think of a song.
Because he used to come out to Eye of the Tiger.
Think of a song that is more synonymous with a person other than like the artist.
Sure.
I mean like. Somebody who didn't do a song that is more synonymous with them than that.
Well, and I don't
because you don't hear that song anywhere else.
Anywhere.
It was only when Hulk Hogan entered the ring.
And to this, for the rest of my life, when I hear that song, you're like, "Whoa, brother! Whoa!" It's like a comic sort of thing because it's so cheesy and over the top. A fight for the rights of every man. I'm a real American, and it's. Is that like the first real theme song to wrestling too? Because now everyone is like, my God, that's Stone Cold's music. But like, was that the first?
I don't know. Well, Macho Man always came out to Pomp and Circumstance.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool.
But I think Hogan was before that though.
Was he?
I think Hogan may have invented like the big theatrical ring entrance. Like he invented modern wrestling. He's the reason anyone gives a damn about wrestling, which I'm not certain that's a good thing. Speaking of high tea, but dude, 10-year-old me... I can't get over the loss of Hulk Hogan, and yet adult me is like, what a garbage human being.
Hulk Hogan dead at the age of 71, if you're just tuning in. Heart attack.
Yeah.
And he will be buried with that, I'm sure, his finest bandanas. But my favorite Hulk Hogan moment was when he body slammed Andre the Giant.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah.
It was like now, the heel turn thing was dumb.
Yeah.
And then we had... Hulk Hogan in black,
yeah,
which
that was Hollywood Hogan.
It just didn't work. It was stupid.
Yeah, although, NWO was pretty sweet, though.
The what now?
The NWO that he joined and headed up, they were pretty badass.
Well, I got to tell you, that Vince McMahon doc, if you want a really good history of wrestling, watch the Vince McMahon doc. It's about him, but it's also like a great documentary on just on the evolution of wrestling, and Hulk Hogan's a big part of it.
Sure.
So if you want to, I don't know, that could be something to watch tonight with a glass of rosé and a salmon salad.
There you go.
You know?
So it bounces out the high tea, low tea. You get all Vince McMahon, who's like the ultimate high tea bro with Hogan, and then you get your salmon salad to bring it back down.
So I have audio of the Hulkster. Okay.
Hopefully not the Hulkster shouting the N-word as he liked to do.
Not quite.
Why would I play that? I am playing a one of Hulkster's songs. You know, remember, he released an album.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I think he was a professional bass player for a while. He was the bass player in, like, Tower of Power.
What?
Yeah, Hulk Hogan was, like, a real musician.
Well, anyway, we have some audio of him in court and him singing in our club hour tonight. It's just, it needs to be played. Okay? Well,
I do miss the days, like, back in the days, those wrestlers, they would release, like, songs. There was, like, a WWF album, I believe, at one point. They made, like, a We Are the World.
Yeah, they capitalized on their popularity, no doubt.
Yeah.
Coming up this hour, the Ducks, we got to follow up on something Dan Lanning said from Media Day. I will say that I feel like Big Ten Media Day has been very low key.
Okay.
Don't you? I mean, there's really not a lot coming out of Big Ten Media Day.
I mean, honestly, the biggest thing would have been like some of the coaches getting in a pissing contest with the SEC.
I'm just waiting for one of the conferences to just go, you know what, we're not going to do a Media Day. And then all of a sudden everybody else, and Media Days just go away.
Follows.
There's just not, I don't know.
Well, it's just like people need something. People need content, so.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, here you go.
Anyway, something Dan Lanning said that I thought was maybe the biggest thing that he said, none of this is major, but I thought that he revealed something that is pretty big for the Oregon football program, and we will get to that this hour, JC Bates.
Cool.
Okay.
I don't know exactly what you're talking
about. You do. You heard it.
I know. I don't know exactly what.
Well, we haven't had a chance to stop down and talk about it yet, but we'll do that this hour because Duck. What's that guy's name in there?
Buck.
I'm Buck.
Buck, hey, what's up?
Buck is a duck.
And it makes me sad.
He mentioned it the other day.
Be careful with all this buck duck. Something's going to, you know.
Right.
Yeah,
slow down.
Careful.
But up next, Arch Manning, already linked to one NFL team.
This is the dumbest, like, theory of all time.
That's next on 105.1 The Fan. P1 Scott just texted me. He said, things I learned from someone who just went through the red light speeding camera diversion class.
Oh, there is a red light diversion class, huh?
Apparently so.
I think I ran like two of them today, by the way.
Speed cameras are set to go off at 11 miles over the posted speed limit.
All right.
So that's...
set it at 9.
That's good to note.
Okay.
I would say set it at 10, but you can go 9.
Well,
if
I was trying to give yourself a little wiggle room, you know?
Yeah, just in case.
Just in case.
If you cross the near stripe of the crosswalk when the light has turned red, the camera is triggered.
Okay.
So
even if you're a little bit into the intersection, they're going to get you.
Yeah, if you cross the near stripe of the crosswalk. So yeah, dude, that means
that you don't, even
don't
have
mess
go,
with it.
You don't even have to go all the way in.
No.
Like they get you.
And then the red light camera also captures people who roll through right turns on red. I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
There's one of these over by Redtail. God, I forget the streets. Anyway, I've seen people get snapped.
Yeah.
Cause I've been behind them for just turning right without stopping.
Now question.
Yeah.
Does it take a photo of you from behind as well as you go through it? Because I don't have a front license plate.
Oh.
Washington, you don't have to have a front license plate. And I do not. I only have one in the back. So does it snap me? Does it get me driving? And then as I go through it, does it take one from behind? Because
I don't remember.
I don't. I've never gotten one. I know the BTJ has gotten one before. And it was hilarious because she was like, how do they know it's me? And it was a great photo of her, like dead to
yeah,
rights.
No, it's, yeah.
It's like, honey.
It's amazing how much it's you.
That's you. But for me, since I don't have one, I'm assuming that you take it in the front, and then as you go through, it takes more as you're leaving.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember.
Otherwise, am I immune to tickets because I don't have a front license plate?
It also says the red light camera captures people who roll through right turns on red and who go through the intersection at 11 or more miles over the limit, regardless of the color of the light when you go through the intersection. Mm. How about that?
Yeah. So it just gets you no matter what.
So the red light camera can catch you speeding.
Mm. Son of a bee. Wow. I hate this.
So there's some news you can use from P1 Scott. Yeah,
Thank you, be careful.
Scott. That's very nice of you to forward that on.
Yeah. Because I think in Oregon, I think you do have to, I think it's required that you have to have front plates.
No, you do. I just had to put one on the Subi.
Because I bought my car in Oregon, but I registered in Washington, so they gave me the choice. And I was like, no, I don't want that.
Now to hot Arch Manning talk. He's the quarterback at Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Cooper's kid, right?
Yes. No. Yeah. Yes.
Eli's kid.
Yeah. No. Cooper's kid.
Cooper's kid.
Cooper's kid. Yeah. He's not one of the famous Manning's children.
Well, I was just looking at the odds the other day. Sportsbook had, I think, Texas a favorite at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm. I think Texas is the favorite to win the whole stinking thing.
But that's correct. At Ohio State?
I believe so.
They're favored by 3.5.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Give me the points.
Yeah, well,
totally.
Ohio State lost a lot, and they're playing a quarterback that's, you know, I think he's a freshman.
Julian Sayin.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he is a freshman. So yeah, but that's why.
It's hard to, I mean, well, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't take the points. I'm just saying, like,
I'll take the points.
Ohio State at home as an underdog, be careful.
Well, I'm taking the points because I've said this a million times.
Championship hangover, too. They're probably factoring that in.
I just do not understand where this Arch Manning hype has come from. Because I watched him when he came in. Quinn Ewers was not good. And he had a chance to run with that job. And he didn't do squat with it. He couldn't beat out Quinn Ewers for 2 years. He couldn't beat him out when he got the opportunity to play. Why all of a sudden are we making Arch Manning out to be the number one pick in the draft and this end all to be all? I already told you, and this is my bold prediction. I think at some point in the year, Arch Manning, much like Quinn Ewers, gets sat down and people are like, what the hell?
Okay, so... You're going to love this then. Arch Manning is already being linked to one NFL team.
Yeah, by one dude. And this is such a dumb thing that he does.
Who's he?
Well, you know who he is.
I actually don't. I think we might be on.
This is Colin Cowherd.
Okay, that's not what I've got here. I've got Charles Robinson's story from Yahoo.
Oh, well, Colin Cowherd did a big old rant saying that it's the worst kept secret that Arch Manning and a certain coach are going to get paired together on an NFL team.
And who would that be?
The Cleveland Browns.
Okay.
Colin literally
was the coach?
Nick Saban.
Oh. Okay.
Colin literally went like on a 10-minute rant about how Nick Saban
it's been called the worst kept secret in the South.
That Nick Saban is going to come out of retirement to coach the Cleveland Browns with Arch Manning. And it's Arch Manning that would get him to come out.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Well, this is from Yahoo Sports, Charles Robinson. And he writes, realistically, everyone believes inside the Los Angeles Rams that Matt Stafford is deeply into the sunset portion of his career. So much so that there's a feeling inside the franchise that if the Rams win the Super Bowl, Stafford will go the way of John Elway and retire. According to a team source, even Stafford himself has joked with staff that the Rams' acquisition of a second first-round pick in the 2026 NFL draft from the Falcons is a sign that LA's brass expects him to hang it up after this season. But does that mean the Rams are also exploring Stafford's replacement? This is a complicated question. First and foremost, Stafford is still operating inside a Super Bowl window. The leadership, both in the coaching staff and front office, is steadfast in his ability, if fully healthy, to lead the Rams. That said, it's clear there is a fixed vantage on the horizon, with Rams decision makers knowing the next offseason is where they have to start moving toward a succession plan, most likely towards a very young player who can grow with McVay and spend an elongated period attached at his hip.
Makes sense.
One prominent name that surfaces inside this ideology is Texas quarterback Arch Manning, who some believe will end up being the number one pick in the 2026 NFL draft if he leaves college before his senior year. Manning is tied to the Rams for a very obvious reason. Les Snead, his stepson Tate, is a close friend of Arch Manning.
Oh, God.
And Snead himself chatted up Arch Manning at the Texas Pro Day prior to the 2025 NFL draft. Mm. But it goes deeper than that. Speaking to a handful of Rams personnel sources, Manning is, at the moment, considered by the staff to be the lone Tier 1 quarterback in the 2026 NFL draft, regardless of who else enters into the selection process.
Sure.
Why? The Rams covet Manning's prototypical size, 6'4", 219, and throwing acumen, but they also believe his high level of athleticism sets him apart from every other college quarterback. So much so, the comparison for Manning inside the franchise is that his ceiling after the 2025 college season could be a Josh Allen type of prospect who is actually stronger physically and a faster athlete than Allen was when he entered the draft in 2018.
It's just...
So there you go.
How?
Not Colin Cowherd.
How?
Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports. The Rams already want Arch.
Over how? Over what? He hasn't played. I just don't get it. He could not beat out...
it's his measurables.
Did Quinn Ewers even get drafted? Did he go in the sixth or seventh round, or was he a free agent?
Where is Quinn Ewers?
I don't even remember. But he was a... Like I said, he was either a super late round pick or he might have been a free agent.
Dolphins. And he was...
Free agent or late in the draft? It was one of the two. He did not go. He did not go high at all.
Number 231.
Okay. Pick. So he was a very late round pick. For 2 years, he couldn't beat him out. Twice, they inserted him into the game. Couldn't beat him out. Couldn't hold the job. And yet now, he's the only tier one quarterback. How? What are we doing?
Measurables, baby.
What do you
mean? His last name.
What do you mean measurables?
Well, he's big. He can throw it. He's athletic.
Drew Aller.
He's athletic. Well, Drew Aller's the number one quarterback in college football, is he not?
At least Drew Aller's played. He's played. But like this, you know, I got Colin Cowherd like, oh, Nick Saban would come out of retirement for Arch Manning. And we got this being like, he's the only tier one. There's other quarterbacks that have played college football. At least we have something to go off of. This is honestly, I'm not kidding. This is one of the dumber college football stories I've seen in a long time. Because you can sit here and debate whether you thought Jake Locker or Tim Tebow or any of these quarterbacks that didn't work, Johnny Manziel, that ended up not being good quarterbacks. But at least they had film to go off of. Or last year, when people were like, well, Quinn Ewers could be the number one pick, at least we had seen Quinn Ewers play. The idea that we're trying to make Arch Manning into something after he has started, I want to say, two games and has played in a grand total, like, meaningful snaps in about five in 3 years at Texas, it's silly. It's dumb. All because he's at Texas and his name is Manning. If his name was Cooper Rush, we'd be like, well, you know, Texas has some high hopes, and he was a big recruit, and you know, they like him. He's shown some flashes in practice. We sure as hell wouldn't be like, I think this kid can be a first round pick. And we wouldn't be like, oh my God, you know, Nick Saban coming out of retirement and Sean McVay will stick around for this kid. Like, who's the kid at Georgia? Like, that guy is, remember the
Stetson Bennett.
Stetson, or not Stetson Bennett, right? The guy that came in after Carson Beck.
Gunnar Stockton?
Gunnar Stockton.
Yeah, there you go.
Gunnar Stockton showed more than Arch Manning.
Well, but wait a minute, though. I mean, I'll play devil's advocate here and say that there have been a lot of quarterbacks, well, not a lot, but there have been several quarterbacks that have come in with this much hype.
After not having played in basically 3 years? Who?
Well, I don't know about not having played in 3 years, but I mean, just before we saw them, they were really hyped. Trevor Lawrence was one. He came in with a lot of hype.
He did come in with a lot of hype.
Andrew Luck came in with a ton of hype.
Yes, he did.
So what's the difference in Arch Manning and those guys? I mean, both of those guys ended up being really good.
Yeah, they ended up being really good. And we didn't talk about them as the first player in the NFL until we had actually seen them play. I mean,
I don't know about that. I mean, I think that Andrew Luck from day one was seen as like the number one recruit, going to be a number one pick.
No one thought that of Arch Manning. No one coming out of high school. And he didn't play. Like, all of those guys you're talking about won the job. It took Arch Manning 3 years to win the job. Three. And now we're like, oh, Arch Manning. I hope he's great. I'm just saying, in my little worldview, we are setting ourselves up for a massive what happened to Arch Manning. And the answer may be nothing happened to Arch Manning. We're just making him into something that we have no idea whether or not he's going to be that or not. Go listen to the way Sark has talked about him the last couple years. It's not like they're like, oh my God, wait until you see what you can do. It has been a very tempered sort of thing. And it's also one thing, again, when you're playing behind Deshaun Watson or somebody, or you're playing behind Vince Young, or someone like that. But you're playing behind a good, not great college quarterback, and you couldn't see the field.
Well, they've already got him going to the Rams.
Yeah, we already got him going to the. Well, one's got him going to the Rams, and the other one has a. Colin has him as some sort of sleeper cell agent to the Cleveland Browns with Nick Saban.
Yeah, well, package deal. Saban loves him. If the Browns are bad, and we think they will be, they get a top pick. They can rope Saban in by saying you can have Arch Manning.
I skipped right by it, but I think I saw another headline that was talking about Arch Manning going to the Saints because
yeah, his dad.
Because well, his grandpa.
Oh yeah, not yeah, his grandpa. Yeah, his dad did not. Cooper Rush did not play for the Saints. But I also love that somehow we're like. I bet you the Saints would love him simply because his granddad played here.
Well, it sounds like a lot of teams might love him.
It sounds like a lot of media members love this story, and we'll actually see what NFL teams think.
Well, I, for one, am hoping that he has a kick-ass college football season.
I hope so, too. I mean, like...
Shut your pie hole.
Well, I mean, at least then it will be proven. I'm just baffled. I guess I'm not baffled because it's what we need to do in the world of college. We have to come up with these sorts of storylines, but I mean,
all right,
we can talk about the big Louisiana Monroe game where he went 15 of 29 with 2 touchdowns and 2 picks. Is that the one?
So he started how many games? 2?
I think he started 2.
When Ewers was out?
When Ewers was out.
Give me his numbers.
Okay. I got to go find the actual ones that he started because he came in the Georgia game when Ewers wasn't playing well. And he went 3 of 6 for 19 yards, by the way, and then got sat back down. And which one? I'm trying to think. Which,
I've got it here. Okay, so
which
he played,
team did he start?
He played against Mississippi State.
Yeah, he went 26 of 31 with 2 touchdowns, no picks. Very good.
325 yards.
Yeah, 35-13.
And he had two, let's see, he had a rushing touchdown in that game as well. That very good
nice game.
Game. The next game, that was Louisiana Monroe. He started and went 15 of 29, 258 yards, 2 TDs, 2 picks.
Okay.
Only carried the ball 1 time.
So, you know, it's okay. Against 2 bad teams, and we had 1 really good performance and 1 that was...
So far his numbers, he is 68% completion, 939 yards in 61 completions, 9 TDs, 2 picks, carries... He's had 25 for 108 yards, which is an average of 4.3 and 4 touchdowns.
And most of those coming in blowout wins against bad teams.
But, I mean, those are pretty good numbers. Anyway, we'll see. And I'm on Ohio State, though.
Yeah, I'll take Ohio State, too.
So say we all of us.
Catching points. The Ducks. Okay, so this is the last thing from Big Ten Media Day that we've yet to discuss. But Dan Lanning did reveal something that I thought was maybe... The biggest thing that he revealed, now he didn't reveal a lot, but we have yet to talk about it here on the show, and so we're going to do that, damn it.
Oh, wow. That's force.
Yeah. You know what that is? It's tea.
You're all high tea. Are you ripping a shirt off?
Let's go. Maybe I will.
Do you need a monster?
Yeah.
Do you need an energy drink?
I need a liquid death and some dude wipes. Yeah.
Let's just start wearing bandanas. Can I bring back the Hulk Hogan bandana? I'm just going to start wearing bandanas every day now.
But first, we've got to go to Buck with SportsCenter here on 105.1 The Fan.
Hey, it's Morgan Abscher.
And I'm Kaylin Moore.
And we're the hosts of the Crime House original podcast, Clues.
Every Wednesday, we sneak past the crime scene tape and open a new case file for some of the most gripping true crime cases.
Follow and listen to Clues, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, wrapping up Big Ten Media Day, which has been very uneventful, thankfully. I think it ended today, although I don't know that for sure.
It did end today. Today was the last day.
USC was out there.
And this is the end of all the media days, all the big ones.
Great.
Now. I wanted to see, I couldn't find anything, but old Nico, not going to play at Tennessee. He was speaking today, and he hadn't spoken since the whole Tennessee debacle, and I was trying to see if I could find some clips from him, but I couldn't see it. He was, like, set to go last at the UCLA presser.
Out of all of the quarterbacks in the Big Ten, maybe not all of them, but let's say Nico, this Julian Sayin kid for Ohio State.
Yeah.
Maybe even Dante Moore. Underwood from Michigan,
mm-hmm.
Who are you most excited to lay eyes on of those guys?
Oh, gosh. I would probably say that we haven't seen. It would probably be Underwood because he's one of those kids that had a lot of hype behind him. And we've seen the other ones. Like, we've seen Dante Moore a little bit. We've seen Damond Williams Jr., who I am excited about seeing up at Washington. You know, the last couple against Oregon and then in the bowl game, he's got some juice to him. But no, I think Underwood at Michigan, but he's the one, remember, that Barstool paid all that money to go back and get. So I think there's some intriguing prospects.
Yeah, he was five-star, right?
But he was five-star. Supposedly, well, like, one of the number one kids.
We've seen Dante Moore. Uh-huh. At UCLA, mm-hmm. and we've seen Nico.
Yes.
I think Nico at UCLA is interesting.
Absolutely.
And Sayan we haven't seen.
No.
Don't know anything about that kid.
No, not any any meaningful snaps.
But Underwood was, yeah, he was like the five-star mm-hmm. recruit.
Yep.
I'd say probably him too.
And I think he was, he might have been an Alabama transfer, if I'm not mistaken, early on, the Sayan kid out of Ohio State. And then what else you got? We've got Mendoza. He's the Cal transfer.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
going to be the trigger man in Indiana. I'm intrigued by the second year of Raiola at Nebraska. I think Nebraska yeah. might have a little something for people.
Here's a question for you.
Yeah, what do you got?
Before I get to this Ducks thing I want to get to, but who is, if Drew Aller is the best quarterback in the Big Ten mm-hmm. this year,
yeah.
who is second best?
It's a good question. I mean, Altmyer at Illinois is one that
he's pretty good.
Is that people? Because again, we've seen him.
Is it Nico?
I could be. Look, I watched Tennessee a bunch last year. I thought he was very average. And
so
I know
CBS put out a list on this. I've got the list if you want it.
Yeah. Who do they say is two?
Julian Sayan.
Oh wow!
Yeah. Even though we haven't seen him.
Correct.
Okay, well then where do they have Moore and Underwood? And
so three, they have Mendoza at Indiana.
Okay.
Four, they have Altmyer. Five, they have Damond Williams at Washington. Oh. Six, they have Nico at UCLA. Seven, Dylan Raiola at Nebraska. Eight, Underwood at Michigan. Nine, Jaden Maiava at USC. 10, Dante Moore at Oregon.
Wow. Okay.
See, and this is the tough part is that so many times when you're ranking these, like you just, and this was my whole point with Arch Manning is, He was a big recruit, and we've got one real game against Mississippi State to go off of. So how do I judge him to say that he's the best quarterback in the SEC, or how do I say that, you know, Bryce Underwood is better than Dante Moore when there just isn't, or saying there just isn't anything to go off of, at least with some of them, at least with Nico, at least with Altmyer, at least with Aller, and which is why Aller is the number one guy because he's played for a bunch of years. So, by the way, by the time we get done in the season, there could be three quarterbacks better than Drew Aller. But right now, he's number one just de facto. Because he started for Penn State for yeah. the last couple of years, and Penn State was good last year.
I think all of that is why the Big Ten might be a little unpredictable this year.
Absolutely.
Because it will depend on Underwood, Sayan, Moore, Nico, these new guys. I mean, hell, they're all new, except yeah. for Altmyer and Aller.
Yeah, and look, Dante Moore at Oregon—
I guess Williams isn't new. But.
Oregon is going to be he's a full time starter now. I mean, he only started. He was a spot guy last year for Washington. They played him the last three games, and he showed some stuff. Showed some stuff against Oregon. Looked really good in the bowl game, and they think he's a real dynamic guy. He's like a little bigger Kyler Murray. So, again, a lot of that is you're excited about him, but the full time starter Dante Moore. We've seen Dante Moore at UCLA, and there was some good, some bad, but that was 2 years ago. But I think that the idea with saying at Ohio State, and I would say Dante Moore, if you're in charge of the Ohio State or the Oregon offense, dude, you're going to put up numbers. I mean, Oregon is going to score 30 plus points a game. So whether that's Dante Moore slinging it all around the field or just relying on the run game, Dante Moore, or maybe it's not even Dante Moore, we assume it's him, who's ever in charge of either one of those offenses is going to put up numbers and thus be considered
yeah.
One of the best quarterbacks in the Big Ten.
I think the difference in how you separate them is what they do in their biggest games.
Yes.
Particularly on the road. Like what Dante Moore will put up numbers, you're right.
Yeah.
But what he does at Penn State is what matters.
Yeah, and this is why I've never been a big Drew Aller guy. And last year, it got a little better, but Drew Aller's a guy that we, again, for the last 3 years, we've been told by everybody, here's the guy to finally put Penn State over the top, and he's, you know, top recruit, and he's 6 foot whatever and 235 and the prototypical guy. And every time Penn State plays in a big game, Drew Aller, he's been dreadful. And last year it was a little better. There definitely was some growth. And so this year, you know, maybe this is the year that Aller shakes all that and proves that he's the guy and he can lead him to a national championship. But yeah, if you're the quarterback at Oregon, you're the quarterback at Ohio State, I don't judge you based on what you do against Purdue. I don't care what Arch Manning did against Mississippi State. Do it against Georgia. Do it against Bama. And when you look at Oregon's schedule, like there's what? Probably two games that you would look at, maybe three, that you're like, all right, that's one that you really got to buckle the chin strap. I mean,
well,
Montana State, Oklahoma State, Northwestern, Oregon State. You could play quarterback.
No, I know. I think it comes down to, well, yes, I could. You're right. It comes down to, there's always, inevitably, there are games where you need your quarterback to bail you out.
Yeah.
Because maybe the defense has a key injury, or the defense just didn't bring it that game, or something. It's just weird. Maybe the other offense is clicking, and you just have to have your quarterback bail you out. And it's hard to predict where that's going to be, but it's going to happen.
Yeah.
This is really the difference. All these teams are good.
Yeah.
Penn State's good. Ohio State's good. Oregon's good. But what's going to be the difference is that, is, you know, those moments. And that's really all I'm going to judge Dante Moore on.
Yeah.
Because he's got a high standard. I don't know if he can pick up where Bo Nix and Dylan Gabriel left off.
That's really elite
talent,
dude. Heisman Trophy level play.
Yes. I mean, and there were games where Bo Nix and Dylan Gabriel pulled it out for them.
Yeah.
Made those plays. That's where I'm looking for Dante Moore, and where I'm a little skeptical about quarterback play this year. I mean, I'm not saying he's not good. Yeah. I'm just saying comparing this kid to Nix and Gabriel, that's a pretty damn tough comparison. And he's going to have to play really well in the biggest moments and in the biggest games for him to live up to that.
And in reality, he probably won't be tested until on the road at Penn State.
Well, that's what I said.
Yeah, at the end of September. So, like, we could see Oregon rolling, and we won't have any idea about Dante Moore until the end of September.
Right, exactly.
On the road, whiteout, Happy Valley. Dante Moore gets to drop the, you know what, and we find out sink or swim, that's where it goes.
Okay, well, we got a little sidetracked there with hot Big Ten quarterback talk, but I want to tell you, we're going to wrap it up with this. What Dan Lanning said that I thought was the most revealing thing at Big Ten Media Day about his team, we will get to that next. On the Fan.
Hey, it's Morgan Absher.
And I'm Kaylin Moore.
And we're the hosts of the Crime House original podcast, Clues.
Every Wednesday, we sneak past the crime scene tape and open a new case file for some of the most gripping true crime cases.
Follow and listen to Clues, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah!
Okay, well, Dan Lanning continues to get bumped here. But we have late-breaking sports news for you guys.
Yeah, it's a good little piece of news.
This is breaking news.
Here on 105.1 The Fan. The Mariners.
It's called sports. It's called baseball in particular.
The Mariners have just acquired Josh Naylor from the Diamondbacks. If you don't know him, he is a first baseman. He's kind of fat. But he's got a great bat.
He can rake. He's hitting .292.
What do you think about that?
11 homers, 59 RBI. That's a great pickup.
He was the guy we were talking about earlier this season where he hit a walk-off grand slam, and he seemed pissed off about it.
Yeah, he was like mad.
Yeah, he always seems a little, he seems
he's
frumpy.
Weird. Yeah. Yeah, he's weird. But I tell you what, he can hit.
Yeah,
he
was an all-star last year. And
that is a nice pickup.
Yeah. Well, everyone thought maybe Suarez would come back, even though... they already had him. And so he was kind of rumored as a guy that maybe Seattle would go out and get also in Arizona, but they picked up Naylor instead.
So the Mariners are getting rid of left-handed pitcher Brandon Garcia and right-handed pitcher Ashton Izzy. They are ranked the 13th and 16th best prospects in the Mariners organization.
Boy, does that seem like a...
That's a good deal.
I
think the deal is like...
Is Naylor expiring or something
like that? Yes. Okay. I think all of the... So the Diamondbacks are going to be sellers, and everyone they're going to sell is a free agent.
Okay.
So I think Merrill...
So this is rent-a-player.
So I think Merrill Kelly is one. Zach Gallen is one. Eugenio Suarez. I don't know if you've watched him. Dude, Eugenio Suarez is having a year.
Dude, it's unbelievable.
He's hit 36 home runs.
Almost Cal Raleigh numbers. It's crazy. Yeah.
And so they're probably going to trade him. And then Naylor, I think all are free agents at the end of the
year. Yeah, he's a, I just looked it up. Naylor is an unrestricted free agent. So I was going to say, for a guy that's a consistent bat and a former All-Star and having another nice year, that just, the 13th and 16th best prospects did not seem like a steep price to pay. And good for the Mariners, by the way, for having some balls to give up some prospects and go get it. I mean, the Mariners are right there. They're six back of the Astros. I don't know if that's going to happen. But you look at the wild card, dude, they're right there.
Oh, yeah.
I want to say they're the second wild card, if I'm not mistaken, right now.
So anyway.
It's a good get.
Good little get. Now watch him hit 212.
Someone's saying, should be nice, he's Canadian. Is he Canadian?
Naylor?
Yeah. Why is he so frumpy if he's a Canadian?
I don't know. I didn't know he was Canadian.
Yeah, Mariners tied with the Red Sox for the second wild card spot right now.
All right, so the last thing I wanted to bring up was Dan Lanning's comments at the Big Ten Media Day. And I thought they were the biggest thing that he revealed, not that he revealed a lot at Big Ten Media Day.
Yeah, he never does.
And Buck mentioned this the other day. We just haven't had a chance to talk about it. He talked about how much weight they've gained.
Yeah.
So he said the team has gained 1,300 pounds. Their peak power numbers are up 21%.
What does that mean? Suk, do you know what that means? Peak power numbers?
I'm guessing
like your lifts?
I'm guessing one of two things. Either that has to do with like your, because they probably do like deadlift, or not deadlift, but like power clean, snatch, some sort of thing like that. It's probably that, or maybe there's a machine that they talk about. Like sometimes you put them in these little, like with these explosive machines where it measures your drive off the ball. It's got to be something like that.
And then the freshman gained on average 17 pounds.
Okay.
Which I think, you know, look, the West Coast teams have always had the label that they're just not as big.
Yeah.
And they're just not. I mean, they really aren't.
Well, no, because, I mean, you look at the defense and the offensive linemen, most of the ones, this is why the SEC has the advantage. The breeding ground down south, they make bigger bodies.
Well, and in Big Ten territory. Yes. I mean, they've grown big up in Wisconsin.
Yes.
So the West Coast teams have never really been able to... it doesn't mean they can't win. I mean, I think it's interesting that Oregon just went undefeated in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And yet felt the need that they really needed to beef up. But I think this is good, what he's saying. I mean, that's a good thing. That, like, if you told me what, like, just said blanket, what does Oregon need to do to really get over the hump?
Yeah.
I think part of it is beef up.
Well, and let's be honest. Like, Oregon, at this point, if they haven't shed the label, it's simply because it's a label that people refuse to remove. But if you've watched Oregon over the years, you know, from Dan Lanning even to Mario Cristobal, they have bodies. You can't watch this defensive line last year with Harmon and Caldwell and Uyunga Galay and be like, oh, it's
they do, but they're smaller across the board, and they're smaller than Ohio State.
Yes.
And that's it. I mean, we're not talking about beating Purdue.
Yeah.
We're talking about getting over the hump and winning a championship. And I would say that that size, overall size, particularly on the lines, problem when you're talking about Oregon football. It's gotten better, but it is not where some of these teams that are winning championships had it. Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama.
That definitely is a tough thing.
Georgia.
Because it's, you know, we just don't have those guys. But I will tell you that having watched Oregon over the years, it is getting better.
I just said that.
Each and every year.
But
yes.
The last two times that Oregon has been absolutely trounced, it was by Ohio State and Georgia.
Yeah, yeah.
They lost by 30 to each of them.
Took an ass.
Why do you think that is? This is part of that.
Sure, yeah. I just think, yeah, I mean, look, those are hard to argue, but I've also seen Oregon, obviously not in the biggest games against Ohio State, but I've seen Oregon physically beat up Ohio State. I've seen Oregon be fine along the trenches. But you are true, and when you're talking about depth and you're talking about year after year, because Oregon is putting O linemen into the NFL, they're putting D linemen into the NFL, but are they the factory that Ohio State and Georgia and Alabama? No. And that will take time to develop. And as you stated, with Dan Lanning talking about peak power and growing and average weight gain and stuff, all of that is, yes, you are building towards a national type program. And he said the whole double down thing. He said he was talking to Dabo in the offseason about, you know, just, he said he respected Dabo Swinney and, you know, Dan Lanning's been very successful each and every year. And Dabo asked him, do you feel good about the direction of your program? Do you like what you're doing? And Dan Lanning was like, yes. And Dabo's point was, if you like what you're doing, even though you haven't gotten where you're going, you double down on your process. Just because you fall short doesn't mean you're not doing something right. Mm-hmm. That's where he said that double down comes from. So one of the things that Lanning talked about getting here is what you just said, getting bigger, getting stronger, building depth. So if you think that that is happening, you don't need to go out and make any sort of grandiose changes. You just keep doing what you're doing and you're going to get bigger, stronger, more physical, greater depth.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good, I mean, that kind of sheds a little light into the idea that Lanning was really kind of going, looking around going, ooh, I need to do differently here? And that's good advice, actually, from Dabo. I didn't know that's where that came from.
That's where that came from, the double down.
The way they're recruiting, the way Lanning is recruiting, I mean, if you add some more beef to the talent that they're bringing in, there's your recipe, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, that is one. I mean, like, there's a reason why they beefed up.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not stupid.
No.
So it needed to be done. Not that they can't win or be good or didn't have bodies, but overall, they are just not as big. I mean, dude, how many times did we go to Oregon, big Oregon games, Rose Bowl games, the Fiesta Bowl game?
It looked different.
And boy, we're down on the field watching Oregon come out of the tunnel and then watch their opponent, Florida State, Ohio State, even Wisconsin.
It looked different.
Dude, it's two totally different teams.
Yeah.
In terms of size. Again, doesn't mean you don't win games, but I think long term, that was a big reveal. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good thing for Oregon football that they've beefed up the way they have.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, when you go and stand on the sidelines with them now and you go down to those games in person, it looks different than it used to. It's why they said last year, top to bottom, that may have been the physically most talented football team that Oregon's ever had, top to bottom, because the recruits are getting better. And when you get better recruits, you get better athletes, bigger, physical, stronger, faster. And they're obviously very happy with the strength conditioning program that they're building. And you mentioned this yesterday when we were talking about continuity. What is the most important thing? Head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator. And what was the other one? Strength conditioning coach.
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal now. And some of these guys are making $1 million a year because you got to have the beef. You got to have the big boys to hang. And you could also make the argument like where Washington fell short. Washington came one game away from winning a national championship, right? They ran into a buzzsaw against Michigan. And where was Michigan better? In the front. They whooped Washington's ass. And, you know, when you look at that Michigan team, they were dominant along the trenches. They weren't as talented as some of those other national championship teams, right? They didn't necessarily have all the skill players in the world, but they had a hell of an offensive line. They rammed the ball down your throat, and their front seven was nasty.
Yep.
Big, physical, and all those guys are now going on and playing in the NFL.
All right, let's move on to the club. I've got Hulk Hogan audio for you. I want you to hear Hulk Hogan speak about his penis.
It's the audio you didn't know that you needed. I remember this from the trial.
I mean, it's...
It's hilarious.
It's not Hulk Hogan, it's Terry Bollea.
Yes.
But we will get to that next. Kick off the club on The Fan.
Hey, it's Morgan Absher.
And I'm Kaylin Moore.
And we're the hosts of the Crime House original podcast, Clues.
Every Wednesday, we sneak past the crime scene tape and open a new case file for some of the most gripping true crime cases.
Follow and listen to Clues, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.